Hi, my name is Robert McMahon. I'm the Connection Director here at Covenant Church, and I'm thrilled that you're listening. If you're checking us out for the first time, welcome. We're so glad that you're here, and I'd like to take this chance to invite you to let us know that you're tuning in today. We'd love nothing more than to help you start building meaningful relationships and to join you on the journey of faith. Just go to bgcovenant.org/connect and let us know how we can be in touch. With that said, let's dive in and listen together to this week's message.
This is week two of our Disordered series. What we're doing for the next five more weeks after this is we're looking at a world that seems profoundly disordered and attempting to make some sense of it in light of what God's word says. It's always good to come back to our center, come back to our foundation, and so that's kind of what we're doing. I've told you last week that the world is not the way it's supposed to be, that God created it one way and that sin has broken that. And so we look around and we see all over the place, this is not the way it's supposed to be. We established last week that in the beginning God created, he is the author, and we said if he's author, he also has authority. Those are one and the same ideas. If he's the author of all creation, then he has authority over all creation, and that's hard for us because we are independent people who like to run our own lives. And if we have an authority, that creates some issues at times for us. Then we also said if God is the designer, then God gets to be the definer. And that'll keep coming up as the series goes on, is if God is the one who creates and defines, then God is the one, if he designs, he gets to define his own creation the same way that Steve Jobs could tell us what an iPhone was and what it wasn't. God who designs all of this can define it the way he wants to. So that's where we started. And today we're going to get into a disordered image. And we all have an image. We all have a self-perception, a perception of others. How does the world work? What's it look like? And as we do that, look around, see if you know, is anybody you don't know around you, anybody? They carry the image of God. That's where we're going to go. Everybody in this room carries the imprint, the thumbprint, the image of God. And so as we continue to fill this place up, as Chris and Chris are doing ushering work, we're filling this place up. We're going to continue to see more faces we don't know, and those faces are faces that carry the imprint and the image of God. If you guys are in the back, you want three seats where I usually sit, I'm not sitting. So my family's serving in the kids' room today, and now you get to sit in the front row. And we get to watch as you come sit in the front row. People are like, do you think people won't come to church if it's like too full? I was like, no, I think they're just going to come earlier so they don't have to go sit in the front row. I'm glad you're here. We're going to start in Colossians. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 17. Read it with me. It says, the Son, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. So Jesus, God, is in charge of all of that. All things have been created through him and what? For him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. What I want you to see is we are created by God. And you go, yeah, you told us that last week. We are created by God for God. And only in God does any of this hold together. This thing is all like a tapestry ready to just be unwound without God's presence in the world. So this makes sure that we recognize that you are here by God's desire, by God's design, for God's pleasure, and for God's purpose. The Bible would say you are here by God's desire and design for his pleasure and his purpose. That is why you exist. Since you're not an accident of biology, because some of us would walk in here being like, maybe I'm an accident of biology. Maybe, you know, I'm just kind of here by happenstance. Maybe the universe conspired and brought me here. You're not an accident of biology. You're not a sperm making a heroic journey to the egg. You're not the electrons firing at just the right moment. That's not why you're here. You're here because God designed and desired you to be here for his plans and his purpose. If that's true, if you were created by God for God, it shifts why we're here. It shifts how we approach that. So then we have to go, well, what is God's desire for us? What is his plan for us? What does his pleasure mean? What it means is you're not here to be happy. It doesn't mean that you won't be happy. It just means that's not the point of life. You're not here for personal fulfillment. You're not alive to become fully actualized or emotionally whole. Although I hope you find that. You are here by God's design and desire for his pleasure and his purpose. Which means you're not the center of the universe. And this is hard. it's a little bit of a paradox. Okay, so your life is about you, right? Your life, it's all it could be about. It's the only life you have. So your life is, in some way, shape, or form, about you and you alone. Except that life, capital L life, is not about you. And so your life has to fit into the structure of the larger life. And so where we fall is we get into a place where we think life is about me. And you're like, well, your life, you're responsible for your life, and your life is about you because it's your life. But life is not about you. Life is about God's plans and his purposes, God's pleasure and desire for all of eternity. That's what life is about. And if we fail at that, if we get tricked into thinking that my life is ultimately for me and my pleasure, we get mixed up, and that's where disorder comes in personally. When your happiness is more important than God's order, when your desire of fulfillment is above God's law, when your emotion takes precedence over his purpose, then we get backwards. We go sideways and we find ourselves in a ditch and we go, I don't know how I got here, but I deserve to be happy. I long to be fulfilled. I feel like I know what I need. And I would say maybe you do, but maybe you don't. And ultimately, God's desire for you is that you would fit into his creation purposes and plans. Because the world is tricky and your enemy is clever. Your enemy will use all sorts of good things, to good virtuous things to actually create disharmony and dysfunction in your life. Sexual fulfillment is God's gift to humanity, but it's not the same as godly love. Drunken laughter is not the same as godly joy. Materialistic gain is not the same as godly peace. I could press in on we could name everything on earth and just go through one at a time. All the things that we have that may have been a great memory, or that could have been fun with friends, but those things are mere reflections of his goodness and his grace. But in order to get to the next point, we need to actually add a layer to this. So we kind of have this idea, God made us for his plan and his purpose. So Genesis 1:26, we'll keep reading there, we'll add a layer. That God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Do you think he's trying to make a point? He said it a few times. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, over every living creature that moves on the ground. And God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth. Every tree that has fruit with seed in it, they will be yours for food. And all the beasts of the earth and the birds of the sky, all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made. It was very good. So you go back through the creation story, and God made everything, and as he made things, light and darkness, as he made stars and oceans, as he made things, he said, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. And only when he creates humanity, only when mankind comes into the picture, he looks at the totality. Now that he has someone to evidence his authority over creation, he puts mankind in the place to have authority over all other created things. And he goes, now this is very good. He's taken it up a notch and gone, this part of it, that stuff is cool. Lions are cool and waterfalls are cool, but people, very cool, very good. Why? It's made in God's image and likeness. It's a phrase you may have heard called Imago Dei. You ever heard this phrase? It's a fancy Latin people way of saying the image of God. It just means image of God. But you'll often run across Imago Dei. There's worship songs, Imago Dei. It means image of God. You were made in God's image. His likeness, God, the likeness of the creator of the universe is in you. Pressed in deeply like a fingerprint, undeniable, it's in you. We are reflections of the creator. And this is interesting. It's kind of like this cool idea, but it's sometimes hard to feel. Okay, I believe you, but whatever. I have a story. I used to be very involved in global missions at a time in my life, and I would get invited all over the world to scout mission trips and to consult mission outposts and these things. And it was once a guy from Peru, he had a Peruvian mission, and he said, would you come and help me? Would you come and see it? Maybe Maybe tell me what I can do better. Maybe you want to bring people. I don't know. What do you? Will you come? And so one-on-one, this guy invites me to go to Peru for 5 days to see his mission. And I was like, you know what? I don't really want to go to Peru. And he goes, if you'll come, I'll take you to Machu Picchu, which is one of the seven wonders of the world. And I went, you know what? I really feel called to go check out this mission. Not going to lie, it tipped me over. So I went, and he has this orphanage in an avocado farm, which is as delicious as it sounds. He was like, do you want to see more? I was like, more avocado trees? Yes. He's like, no more children. I was like, yes, too. I mean, but this is incredible. It's like Eden. It's lush and it's green. There's a river running through it. Everything was perfect. It's the first place I saw a Tom's shoe drop. Remember Tom's shoes? We get buy one, give one. And there was a warehouse full of all black Tom's shoes. And they said, yeah, the executives from Tom's came in, just dropped off all these shoes. And I was like, what do you do with them? He goes, I don't know. They don't fit anybody here. And I was like, cool. So Tom's shoes. Anyway, I'm helping him figure out how he does his mission, how he rethinks his partnerships, and I feel like, man, I'm doing actually great work for this guy. I can't wait to be rewarded with Machu Picchu. So the second to last day before I'm to fly home, he comes to me and he goes, hey, you know, just FYI, I don't think we're going to kind of make it to Machu Picchu. And I was like, FYI, what? I was super bummed because I'm not going back to Peru. Like, there's not a whole lot calling me there. And I was pretty bummed out. And yet at the same time, I was a little confused at why I was so bummed. Because, I mean, you could see it. It's just a bunch of rocks on a mountain. It's an outline of what used to be. It's like half walls and little stone paths, but it's not actually there. There's nothing to do there except to see what was once there. And it's kind of a confusing thing that it's so intriguing that 8,000 feet above the earth in the top of this mountain, there used to be this Incan civilization, and but why do I want to see it? Because it's not actually different than like a bunch of bricks in your backyard. From a physical standpoint, it's the same thing as you having a bunch of stones and bricks in your backyard. The people who owned our house before us, they had a pool, and then they filled it in, and at times I'll be doing yard work, and I'll run across like some remnant of the pool. You know, some brickwork under the grass. I'm like, why are there bricks under the grass here? And like, oh, that was probably part of the outskirt of the pool or whatever. And so I can always kind of get a picture of it. But this is not different than that from a fundamental physical level. It's the same. So why is it so interesting? Why do people come from all over the world to go there? Because it's on a mountaintop city from the 1400s and it's still visible 700 years later. Because it's persisted and it's held on, and we have very little from that long ago that we can still actually see and get a sense for. I could go buy a bike at Walmart right now, chain it to a tree on a sunny day, and by the end of the day, it'd be a pile of rusted parts, right? Like, that's how fast stuff goes in our world. But something from the 1400s is almost inconceivable that it's just there. Because you can see the imprint of what was. You can see the thumbprint of what the society looked like. You can squint and imagine what life looked like there. Some of you have been to like Jerusalem. You've been to and experienced old world tours like that. You can squint and sort of see what life was like. You can squint and get a sense for what is really going on. It's a portal into the past because it carries the imprint or the likeness of the Incan civilization. And there's power in likeness. There's power in the imprint. There's power in getting the sense of the thing behind the thing. Take a minute to explore two false views that we hold about the world. A lot of people these days believe that people are generally inherently good. This is popular. You hear this a lot. Oh, you know, I think every time there's like a terrible thing that happens, people go, you know what, that's terrible, but I feel like people are generally inherently good. On the other end, you have people who think that all humanity is generally entirely bankrupt, bad and selfish. And the religious people see this, and religious people go, well, obviously they're stained by sin. Irreligious people say, just watch the world long enough, and you can see that everybody is ruined. And I would actually argue that both are disordered on some level. Both are right on one level. Both are disordered and wrong on another level, because they both oversimplify and eliminate the key truth. Because while it is true that humanity has fallen, the Bible tells us that in Romans chapter 3, right? The Bible says all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So yes. So where is our goodness? What is the goodness in us? Short of Jesus, there's nothing good, okay? But the Bible also says that every single person carries the imprint and the likeness of God, that the imago Dei is in us. And even though sometimes you have to squint to see it, You have to use some imagination to remember what that would look like. It's there. And in the worst person you know, don't name them, God's imprint is there. God's image is there. God's likeness is there. Eugene Peterson says it this way: there is no place, and I would say person, no place or person on earth without the potential for unearthing holiness. That if God made it, in his image and his likeness, if God created this thing and it was good, and it was very good, if God created this, then there is good in it, there is beauty in it, there is holiness in it, and it's up to us to unearth that. It's like excavation work. It's Machu Picchu. What was this? There's something there. And you get in and you start digging and they look around and they go, oh, this is incredible. Look at this. And I found that and here's this. And they can re-piece together what life was like. And we are on a mission, you and I, of unearthing holiness in the people around us, unearthing holiness in the structures around us. I'm not very political. It's not something God gave me as a wiring. We have people in our church that are politically much more active than me, and I applaud them. God wired them for it. They're unearthing holiness through our government structure. While some of us are cynical and go, the government's broken, you can never fix it, other people go, watch me. There are people that are doing it in the marketplace, and some people are like, I don't know, business is kind of broken, capitalism is, and other people are in the marketplace going, you don't think there's holiness here? Watch me. Watch the way I treat my employees. Watch the way I give out our profits. Watch the way I do. Watch me. They're unearthing holiness in things. And I think every single one of us has to look around and realize that God's imprint, his image is in the earth, it's in the people around us, and it's up to us to figure out how to unearth that. It requires excavation, but it's there. God says it's good. All of creation is full of holiness. All of creation is full of holiness. I like New York City. It's full of holiness. Urine-soaked subways, holy. The architecture is like, not just buildings. No, it carries some reflection of a creator who designs things for a reason and for a purpose. And if there's 8 million or 20 million or 50 million people in a little dense area, you know how much holiness is in that place ready to be unearthed? It's beautiful. The same thing is true of a cornfield in Wood County. You look at a cornfield and you go, it's just corn. And now it's like industrialized corn, and they're using machines. And I mean, it's not even like a farmer. They could just put a GPS-driven tractor on it. That's beautiful. There's creation in that. There's ingenuity in that. There's design in that. The way that the rows are just perfect, as if God may have designed a thing like that one day. And you can look at a cornfield and go, it's beautiful. There's holiness ready to be unearthed there. So what happened? Genesis 3, we read that humanity introduced disobedience into God's holy design. What was once pure was polluted by sin, and every human being since has continued to pollute God's perfect order with their disordered lives and sin. Cornelius Plantinga says it this way. We quoted him last week. We'll keep quoting him. He says, to pollute soil, air, or water is to blend them into foreign materials. That's what pollution is. Machine oil, for example. So that these natural resources no longer nourish or delight very well. Similarly, the introduction of a third lover into a marriage, an idol into the natural human relation to God, adds a foreign agent to them, and it corrupts these things by addition. He's saying if you dump a drum of oil into the pristine mountain stream, it's not so pristine anymore. I don't think you want a cup of a drink out of that on your hike. And yet, if you squint, you can still see what it was supposed to be. That the pollution, while it ruins it for our delight in God's design, it doesn't ruin his inherent holiness in the place. The impression of beauty is still there. All forms of sin and brokenness corrupt humanity, but every person still carries God's image. I'll say it this way. We have to be sophisticated enough to see that sin has busted everyone up. Look around the room. We got to be that sophisticated. Sin has busted everyone up and unleashed all sorts of evil, and God's image and likeness and his holiness is alive in creation and imprinted on every human being. Both are true. Everybody is broken, and everybody carries his likeness. Everybody sins, and yet everybody carries his perfection. Everybody is flawed, and yet everybody has his likeness and his image and his holiness just waiting to be unearthed. So how do you see the world around you? Can you see God's order in the disorder of the world around you? Can you see his image even where sin is polluted? Pristine creation. Can you see God's image in yourself? When you look in the mirror, do you see the likeness of the Creator? Because you were made on purpose for a purpose. You were not an accident of design. You were on purpose for a purpose. And if we are image bearers, it makes very clear why we serve and honor other people. If we are image bearers, the reason that all of these bizarre Christians who could have done anything they wanted with their Sunday morning, spent time getting ready and then driving here and then fighting for parking, I mean, parking is a problem right now. How many people park on the street like 19 cars down? I tried to park in the grass today and my car sunk about 4 feet down into a swamp. I'm just going to leave it. I mean, I'll walk the rest of the week. I don't know. And it is what it is. It's a hassle sometimes to get here. And you could have done anything else. Your taxes are due tomorrow. I said that because one person in here is going to be like, what? Yeah. God's image is in the extension you're about to file. You choose to come here. You choose to be a part of this thing. You choose to give your time and your energy and your heart. We have people volunteering up here that lead us in worship today that gave us 8-9 hours this week of volunteering time. My wife and oldest daughter are rocking babies today. Why? Why do we choose this? Because something in us knows what's true. Something in us is sure that this is God's image and likeness around us. Something in us knows that we can be part of unearthing holiness. Something in us is aware that we're all image bearers. It's why we serve. It's why we desire to do good. It's why we want to honor others. It's why we love the poor. It's why we want to love the sick, visit the sick. It's why we take care of our elders. It's why we cherish our children. If every human life bears God's imprint, we have to affirm then, and this is part of our statement of faith, we then affirm that every life has value and dignity. If every life carries God's imprint, then we have to affirm that every life then carries his value and dignity and his essence and his image. So we would affirm that people with physical or mental disabilities are not less. Amen. We would affirm Stephen is not less. He bears God's image. He bears God's glory. He's groaning at all creation like the rest of us for something greater. It's beautiful. We would affirm that an unborn baby, a God-created child in the womb of a mother, is worthy of our care and protection. We would affirm that. And it's often inconvenient. It's often tragic. There's all kinds of complication that goes in there that the nuance we have to deal with as we try to love everybody in every situation, because everybody in every situation carries God's image. But we would affirm that it's on us to care. And yet sin always pushes us back to chaos. Sin always invites you to reject God's holy design. Sin is just God. It's just the enemy's way of inviting you to reject God's holy design, to pollute the perfect creation, to lose sight of the design. And when you can't see the Creator's imprint anymore, when sin kind of fogs up the glass just enough that you can't see the image of God in all things anymore, then you begin to live for what you can see. If you can't see God in all things, you live for what you can see, and what you can see is self and my own needs. Selfishness takes over, and then we end up seeing our lost neighbors as hurdles to our happiness. Can you believe he parks in the street right there? Can you believe? I got a neighbor that just put up like some sort of cage in their front yard. Like Guantanamo Bay, but Bowling Green. It took us like a few weeks. It went up in winter and we're like, what do you think these people are doing? In the front yard? Do you know what that does to my home value? Oh. Well, they're new to the neighborhood, and she wants to grow like a garden kind of thing. But also, there's 6,000 deer that live in the neighborhood. And the only way she can think of growing something the deer won't eat is to put Guantanamo Bay on our street. And so there's this hideous, ugly cage in her front yard that's going to be her garden. And my options are, one, resent her for ruining our street, with that metal, or walk over and ask her what it is she's going to grow and engage her on the passions of her life and know that God's image is in her, and who cares about the other stuff? But when we are self-focused, everything else in the world only matters in how it relates to me and my happiness. When we are God-focused, we begin to see God in others. She wants to cultivate the earth. How very Garden of Eden of her. I will affirm that. But it's hard to get there. It takes work. Look around our city. Take a look at teenagers, college students. The tractor pull is coming back. Teenagers, I'm not throwing you under the bus, but sometimes we see you as rebellious. Doing your own thing. College students, we love you, but there are a few of your number who I think are coming to college just to see how drunk they can get how often. And the nuttiness that happens on Main Street after midnight is sometimes a testament to that. The tractor pull, I cannot tell you some of the things I've seen in our parking lot on Sunday morning post-tractor pull. There are more cars running and more people in them than you would imagine, doing more things you don't want to know about. Where we knock on the door and go, hey, people are showing up for Jesus. Unfog the window. What? You're welcome to come in if you want. No shirt, no shoes. Okay, whatever, come on. And we would look at those potential things and go, rebellious teens or drunk college students or hedonistic tractor pullers. That's because we fail to see God's image in them. When you squint, like at Machu Picchu, you squint to see the outline of what's really happening there. What you see is you find people desperate for community. You find people that are desperate for hope and love. You find people that are desperate for intimacy. And you see it through the lens of what God created them for. And you go, they're just one degree off from what God created them for. Their sin is sin, absolutely, but it's one degree off. What they really want is togetherness. What they really want is a transcendence. What they really want is community. That's what they want. So we have to keep our eyes open for the imprint. Even in your own stumbling through sin, I would argue that every sin you're involved in is some dull reflection of what God created you for. You're chasing something holy and good, but just a lesser version of it. You're chasing something holy and good, but one degree off from what it really is. Aiming for your heart longing and just coming up a little bit short. And if you look closely amidst the brokenness, it's there. In your season of wilderness, maybe you're in a valley, and you go, man, this is a hard season of my life. I would say God's fingerprints are in it. They're in your friends and neighbors and the earth and all created things. God's presence is still here. God's image still abounds. God's likeness is still in your season, even in places where it feels, man, I wish he would come invade this place and rescue me. His image is on the loose. His holiness is waiting to be unearthed in all things. But you got to pay close enough attention to see it. And do something a little different today. I'm going to tell you what we're going to do for communion. I'll invite the band up in just a second, and I'm going to tell you a story. At the close of the sermon, when the band starts playing, we got tables here at the front. We do communion every week, and the whole idea is, as followers of Christ, Jesus invites us to the table to remember who we are, how we got here. The bread represents his body that was broken for us. The cup represents his blood that was shed for us. His great sacrifice that brought us into the Father's house. So when we come forward in just a little bit, you take the bread, you dip it in the cup. That's how we do it. If you're a follower of Jesus, we'd invite you to do it. If you want a self-serve sanitary cup, you can take that back to your seat. Do that however you want. If you're not a follower of Jesus or you're a guest and you go, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this, we're good with that too. You're in the right spot. No one's looking at you. No one's wondering why you didn't go forward. What's wrong with that person? That's not happening. So you can be relaxed. So Greg is going to come on up. And I think it's the right time to tell you about this guy named Colton. In 2021, my family, kind of post-COVID, you know, you were just aching to get out of the house for anything. We went to a few concerts. One of the concerts we went to was a David Crowder concert in Columbus. with the picture I took. We had great seats. My family, they're getting taller. My wife is not getting taller. She's getting shorter. But my children, for a long time, my goal, the perfect seat in any place is the second level, first row, because then no one's ever in front of you. So when you take your little people to a concert, they can see. So that's what we got. We had front row, second level, right in the center. You know, when you go to a concert, you check out your neighbors too. Like Christian concert, you get there early. Normal concert, you go a little later. You skip the opening. At Christian concert, you're supposed to be there early, like church. You know, you're like, oh, got to be here early. And everybody's just talking and real nice. And there's like moms with their kids and youth groups over here. And so I'm just looking at who are the people I'm going to share this experience with. You just kind of do an inventory. There was a young man behind us. I know his name was Colton because I heard everyone call him Colton. He got a lot of attention. Colton had special needs. I don't know what they were. He was nonverbal, like guttural, groaning, growling, but no actual English words. With all due respect to Colton, he would sort of roar and do Chewbacca sounds, and that's how he told people what he needed. So they had snacks, and they had things, and they're talking to him, and he'd make some sort of roar back at them, and they would know. It was sweet and it was gentle, and I was thinking about these people that were caring for Colton, and I thought, how sweet is this? They see how beautiful his life is, and they brought him to a concert, and I don't know what he gets or doesn't get, but I think it's awesome. Super cool. So the concert starts, and it's all loud and lights and all the things, and every band, you know, every band, every artist has that one song that the crowd sort of collectively waits for as the sing-along song. If you go into Journey, it's Don't Stop Believing, right? I mean, you know what it is. When you think of the band, you go, well, that's probably the song that people want to sing to. For David Crowder, it's always been How He Loves. You know that song, Oh, How He Loves Us? And people tend to wait for it, and you can sense the crowd waiting for it and waiting for it. And then the first chords of that song come in, and the bass starts thrumming. The room starts to come alive, and the singing starts like full-throated worship. He didn't even have to be there. And I start losing myself in the moment, and the music drops out at that moment, in the perfect concert moment when the music falls away and it's just the voices in the room, and I'm losing myself. And this is rare for me. I want to admit something to you. It's rare for me in a room full of people to find myself alone with God. That's a hard space to be. As a pastor, I know a lot of your stories and heartaches. I know your pains, and I know all the things happening. And I look around our room, and even when I'm in fullness of worship here, it's often in light of what I know you're going through. So a concert presents this really unique opportunity for me, because I can look around that room and I don't know anybody. I don't know their heartbreak. I don't know their marital strife. I don't know any of their stuff. And I'm like, man, it's just me and God. And everyone else in the room is like atmospheric supply for me. They're all there for me. I'm glad they're there, but they're there just to kind of build the background noise so I don't feel as alone when I'm singing out too, because I don't get to sing out that often. So the music drops out and it's just the voices, and How He Loves is just echoing through, and I'm like, this is heaven. And then rawr. And Colton was chiming in. And I can be honest with you, tell you it was not what I'd hoped for. That my moment, this was my moment. I was lost, I was in it, me and God, and then Colton, rah, dissonant consonants strung together, no sense whatsoever, not in tune, not on beat, the song is just tanking now. And I look around and there's a couple thousand other people having a great time. That night in the Palace Theater, I wanted to escape to hear from God. Colton wouldn't allow it. As the crowd sang How He Loves, he just kept growling and gargling and grumbling and who knows what. And for a moment, I was pretty crestfallen. Until it hit me that Colton wasn't ruining my experience, but explaining it. He was opening up the experience to me. He was teaching me, and God kind of whispered, hey, this was the point, dude. The truth of that moment undid me. That the songs we sing are not these distant ideas, but they're living spirit moments that unfold in our presence. And the guttural moaning of Colton wasn't a distraction. Colton wasn't failing to verbalize in that moment. He was perfectly reflecting my spiritual reality for me to see. He was carrying the imprint of God, the very seal of creation and beauty. He was carrying it for me. And in his brokenness, I saw the picture. That we're all Colton. Made in his glorious likeness, attempting in our beauty and in our holiness and in our wonder, fearfully and wonderfully made, God's glory is in our broken bodies trying to escape. Trying to overcome. And our flesh wars against our spirit, and our souls feebly and meekly try to find ways to encapsulate and express our hearts, but oftentimes we never get there. Colton got there. While we're usually nothing more than prideful, stumbling, and hopeless groans, sometimes the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit of God, intervenes, and the Spirit of God is on the move in this place the same way he was then. And he took the guttural groans of Colton and he receives them as worship. He takes my broken life like Colton's and he receives it back as worship. He translates you, he reforms you, he guides you, he restores you. And in that moment, as I failed to sing the song I was there to sing, I realized that God was singing a different song over me. You can't outrun his grace. You can't outsin his love. You can't be too broken to offer him a gift that he'll receive with gladness because he's your father. I mean, we got a lot of father issues in the room, a lot of brokenness in the room. Your perfect father who loves you just wants you to open your hands and open your life and open your mouth and sing your song. Because the Bible says creation groans for the glory of renewal. We cry out desperate. We were made to be known and loved and redeemed because we were made in the image of love and redemption. Our neighbors, no matter how lost, carry the hope of holiness imprinted on their souls. And that night, and so many nights since, I cry out like Colton. In the midst of the mess and the lesser things, the things that I think must disappoint God and make him not love me as much, he goes, "Oh, how I love you." So my prayer becomes, God, fill me with your spirit to undo me and reform me again. Show me a picture of who I am at my core. Not all put together, not well rehearsed for you on Sunday morning. Who am I at my core? I'm Colton, stumbling and groaning through life. And it's beautiful life. I've never met Colton. I'll never forget him because he's just like me. And I'm exactly like him. We carry the same imprint and design. We hold the same hope and desperation. We groan for the same God, the same grace and mercy, the same return to wholeness and design. We groan for an earth that is returned to the fullness of its glory, where there's no inch of ground that isn't holy, where there's no ounce of humanity that isn't redeemable. That's what we groan for his hope and his love. He has created you in his image. For his glory and his purpose. If you stop to think about that the God of the universe created you on purpose, there's no other response than, oh, how he loves us.
Will you stand with us?